marketing seemed like the right appropriate because I wasn't sure if I wanted to do sales or brand marketing or merchandising. It just seemed like the center focal point that I'd get a good overall background.
Welcome to Beyond High Street. My name is Jenny Derrick, and I'm the Dean of the Pharma School of Business here at Miami University. Today, I am joined by Mary Van Praagh, who graduated with a Bachelor of Science degree in marketing back in 1987. So hi, Mary, and thank you so much for agreeing to do this podcast, Beyond High Street.
Thank you, Jenny. I love the name of the podcast. Well, I remember High Street quite well.
Well, I have been known when I invited one guest, quite a respectable alum, to call it Beyond Brick Street in my email. So it is Beyond High Street, just in case the listeners are wondering. It's easy to make that mistake. So during this podcast, as our listeners know, we weave through a range of topics so that our listeners can get to know you more about your journey and your reflections along the way. So tell me, the most important question is, why did you choose the Pharma School of Business?
Oh, that's an easy one. I actually grew up in Ohio, so I knew that I would be going to some type of state school. And Miami at the time had a fantastic reputation. It was called the Public Ivy. And I was just mesmerized by the beauty of the actual campus. You know, everything you can think of with the red brick buildings and the beautiful gardens, and fairly easy to get around and just the right size, right? I had grown up and I was really very close to where family access could be. My father lived in Cincinnati. My mom lived in Dayton. So it was a nice, easy hour commute if I needed to see family. But I was so, I actually talked to my guidance counselor in high school and really was looking for a strong business program. I knew that I wanted to go into business. And that was one that he recommended at the time. And I had an old neighbor that also was a Miami, current Miami student in her senior year. And so I just always had my sights. It was the only place I wanted to go. So I was very lucky to get admitted. You know, at that time, it wasn't so easy. And I had such a great experience.
That's great. And did you know you wanted to do marketing, or at what point did you realize marketing was for you?
I always knew that I wanted to do something in business, and marketing seemed like the right appropriate because I wasn't sure if I wanted to do sales or brand marketing or merchandising. It just seemed like the center focal point that I'd get a good overall background. But marketing was something that I loved brands, and I'll give you a little bit about my background related to that. So marketing seemed like the ideal major.
I love that. And so talk to me about your background. So I've certainly got your profile here from LinkedIn, but go through the history. You started at Playtex Family Products, and you certainly have had a really rich background in sales and key account management, then moving up to business development and strategic work as well, and now, of course, CEO. So talk to us about the journey that you've been on and to an extent, you've been in the same sector most of the time. So again, talk to us about that.
I would love to. Well, first of all, I think you'll be happy to know that my first job offer came from the Miami Career Planning and Placement Office. At the time, you were offered a number of, I call them credits, that you could bid on certain companies that you wanted to interview with. And there were a number of career fairs. So I actually found my first position, was offered a job before graduation, and started, picked up my bags, rented the U-Haul, and moved to Louisville, Kentucky about 2 weeks after graduation. So I started in consumer products. I also was offered an opportunity to work for a big retailer in merchandising, but I chose consumer products because I knew that sales would be a great overall education for me to learn all aspects of the business. So I was a bit of a trailblazer. I was the first, I think the only sales rep that I saw in many of these big retailer lobbies in the state of Kentucky. I had the entire state, like Kroger and small little regional players, but it was very independent and autonomous. And Miami really prepared me for that. I didn't know a single soul in Louisville, Kentucky. And I ended up spending 10 years with Playtex. I always say I grew up. I learned the consumer product business. I did a number of key account management roles, district manager, regional manager, and then did an in-house role. And my first big customer was Walmart at the time, which is the largest retailer in the world. At the time, had 500 super centers, but I was a key account manager and kind of created a team. And then that led to a number of other consumer product roles, namely big ones like Warner Lambert, Revlon, Johnson & Johnson, and Coty. So I spent all of my time really specializing in consumer products. And I ended up loving the beauty portion of the industry because it was so dynamic and innovative and very fast-paced. And Coty was a really great experience. I had my first general manager assignment, so I moved to Canada and ran a full P&L. I then was recruited from a private equity company to be a first-time CEO for a prestige skincare business. And then I did a bit of a side stint for the first time. After 17 moves, I was able to live close to my family in Florida, and I was a public company group president for an apparel retailer. And then I joined Milani as CEO a little over 3.5 years ago, and have masterfully turned around a business, and it's thriving now and at all-time highs, and it's also owned by a private equity firm. So I'd say I've worked for public, private, entrepreneurial, but half of my career was specializing in sales, marketing, and strategy. And then the second half of my career was focused on managing cross-functional teams, transforming businesses, and really focusing on managing the P&L. So it's been a very exciting career, and I owe a lot of that to my experience at Miami.
So I love it. I want to dig in a bit to Milani. So tell us about the brand Milani, and so that's A, how it started, what the vision behind the brand was, and probably still is, and also if you could articulate or summarize the things that you paid attention to as you turned around the business. What would you attribute the turnaround to?
Okay, though I love to talk about this. Well, first of all, Milani was founded over 20 years ago. And it's all about luxury quality, but accessible color cosmetics. And we were the catered around an inclusive audience since the inception of the brand, meaning all skin tones, colors, pigments, etc. We're known for a heavy pigment load, and we're made in largely Italy, the US, and some products in Korea. We work with the finest labs and co-manufacture these fabulous products that are made at the same place luxury products are made, but we bring it at an affordable price. So our average price point through the registers about $10. And what happens is these content creators that are now all over social media, such as TikTok and Instagram, usually relate the brand to being the best in drugstore makeup that performs like high end and to an inclusive audience. So we call it this high end, low key. And the brand, really, I would say, has come into its own the last 3 years when I amassed a fabulous leadership team. First of all, I think any business has to start with having the right team and capability to pull off a turnaround. A lot of the team I have worked with in my past, so I knew that they were A, capable of running a business such as Milani, that we were aligned and motivated to take the company to new heights. So we compete in a mass color business against a lot of multinational public companies, many of which I've worked for. We compete with the likes of L'Oreal, e.l.f. Cosmetics, Coty, Neutrogena, Revlon, etc. And Milani is the second fastest growing color brand. And it's very exciting because we've jumped rank and share, and yet we're still writing the chapters. We believe we can double the size of the business in the next 3 years. So it's just really exciting.
So my question is a bit Oxford centric at this time.
Yes.
So you talked about distribution through drugstores as being a main source of distribution. So Walgreens here has just closed down, and we've got a CVS. So talk to me about the strategy with respect to distributing through
Okay.
drugstores, right? Given how much our retail opportunities have
Okay.
changed.
So we have over 20, we're distributed in 20,000 outlets here in the US. Our largest customer is Walmart, Target, Ulta, drugstores, and food. And we're actually in 45 countries. What we look for is the accessibility, right? So that's different than from selling at Sephora, which is very exclusive, or department stores. So our brand is the mass version of these luxury products, but we want to make them accessible to everyone. And so that's how we choose those distribution partners, is in offering that and offering an experience that's self-serve versus having self-assist with somebody else working over the counter with you. So it's, and the price points are much more accessible, but things have changed so much in the last 5 years with the rise of social media that these content creators will easily explain the differences. And there's lots of tutorials before and afters and comparisons to other prestige products. And it's so, you know, somebody can go to Walmart, be on their grocery trip, and, you know, go 10 aisles over and hit the color cosmetic aisle. So it's about the accessibility as well.
I love it. So when you were talking about your background, you talked about your love for the cosmetic industry because it's dynamic and innovative. So I don't work in the fashion industry. I'm in higher education. Mm-hmm. So this question may be odd, off, but I always am intrigued by brands such as Milani or any other fashion brand. Are you about how it either influences or is influenced by fashion, and how that works?
Yes. And I actually had, first of all, I have a love of fashion. I have my whole life. Just as I love color, texture, pattern. Fashion has a lot to do with it, right? We follow the trends. Usually if something hits the runway and it's all nudes and blacks and browns, it might be a little softer, more natural makeup look versus vibrant color. So fashion has a lot to do with it. So do the psychographic and cultural moments that are happening all around us. And we cater to our target audiences, Gen Z and millennials, although we span a range of people, but it's also the psychographic people that are beauty enthusiasts and really want to self-express. And, you know, it's a bit of a joy. It's an affordable joy. It's an affordable luxury to be able to wear makeup. But I would say there is a strong connection between fashion and beauty.
And as you're managing a global brand, and you've certainly managed other global brands, how much difference do you find exists across the world, or is fashion and our preferences largely universal?
Well, I think it depends, obviously, on the country. So some of our biggest markets are Australia and the UK, and I think there are a lot of similarities to North America in regards to that, in terms of brand awareness, because they follow a lot of the trends, and the social media obviously is global, right? So, but then there are nuances and differences in regions based on shade, preference of technology and feel and ingredient based. So there are differences. But I think the brand's DNA, we express it similarly. You can't be a different brand in a different country. It, you know, you have to have the DNA and the cues in each of the countries. And that's what we stand for, this affordable luxury that we fit every skin tone and type, that we're largely pigmented, and we have great quality products. That is the same in every country.
Well, as I was reading and preparing for this interview, Mary, I see that you got an award called Brand Builder of the Year back in 2023, just last year, for turning around Milani. So I know you've talked a bit about turning around Milani, but what else would you like to add to that award? And it just sounds fabulous.
First of all, thank you. That was Women's Wear Daily, which is a very big deal in our industry. And they celebrate a number of brands on an annual basis. And two of the awards were people. The rest were brands or products. And I was quite surprised and humbled when I started to hear a little bit of the storyline. I'm thinking, oh, that sounds a little bit like me. And I was quite surprised and honored, because it was a great affirmation of all the hard work that both my team and I have accomplished, really, at Milani. And what I mean by that is every marker on the business, from brand awareness to market share to sales, profitability, gross margin, consumer engagement, every marker on the business is at an all-time high. And I started during the downturn of color during COVID. You can imagine, everybody was wearing masks. We were all behind Zoom screens. People had not, you know, they weren't socializing. They weren't out working. So the makeup sales plummeted. So not only have we well rebounded pre-COVID, that was a tough time where you had to kind of dig deep and say, how are we going to manage this business during a massive downturn. And that's when you had to like dig deep and say, do I have the right people around the table to deliver this? A. B is the strategy in place still relevant? And what needs to be dusted off? And so basically what I did is kind of took I would say every piece of the business and reevaluated it from our assortment architecture, our merchandising principles, how we were thinking about marketing and talking about our brand, refreshing the entire creative aspect and giving this, hint of luxury cues, winning with the key retailers that mattered most, and then reorienting the entire company around we must win as one, no more of the silos, break them down, and that every sale that we went after had to be a profitable one. Because, we're not a non-for-profit. We need to make money as a company. So kind of just decoding every aspect of the company. And now it's thriving. We have very low turnover, the highest engagement scores in any company that I've ever worked for, and I've done that a lot. A really thriving culture. We work in a hybrid organization and we're winning in the marketplace. So that's super exciting.
I love that story. My last question, probably before we go for a trip down memory lane, is you're talking about makeup sales dropping substantially through COVID. Of course, we were locked up and at home. Was it true that eye makeup took off? Was that true that people
Yes,
don't,
because a lot of people were wearing the mascara. All you could see was their eyes. So eye has always been a high consumption category, particularly mascara. Think how many times you go through mascara. But now lip has come back. You've probably heard of the lipstick index. Lip is really hot now. And you see kind of it's the year of red lipstick. If you look around, you'll see a lot of lip oil is doing phenomenal. But yes, eye has always been the largest subsegment of the category.
Well, lucky Miami's color is red, so we can wear our red lipstick.
I agree. I wouldn't have it any other way.
And so, for our listeners who can only hear you but can't see you, Mary is wearing red and has fabulous red lipstick on.
Yes, I'm wearing our fabulous color fetish matte lipstick and the color Poppy. It's a
There we
fabulous.
go. There we go. And it suits you well. So now it's time to take a trip down memory lane. So, when you look back at your time at Miami, who was your favorite professor?
I remember Dr. Charles Watson. And the reason he was a management professor, and I always thought he was very thought provocative. And I'll never forget the first day I showed up in class, he was in a bow tie. I think a bow tie was one of his signature moments. Well, I also had great marketing professors, great management professors, but he was the one that stood out to me in terms of the management team.
What subject did you least enjoy?
Oh, I remember this. I think I really struggled with economics. There was a professor that did I think it was a test, like test textbook and test curriculum. And boy, I think I struggled to get a passing grade. Like I was, and he would call on you always. It was a lot of it was self-participation, and I felt totally out of my league.
At least you're honest. Thank you for sharing. So, what co-curricular activities were you involved in?
Well, I was a Tri Delta, so I joined a sorority. I pledged a sorority. As you know, there aren't any campuses, which was great because I ended up mixing with lots of great roommates from many other sororities. But I really found that that was a foundation for me. And I was a junior Panhell president of kind of a cross section of sororities. And then I was a Tri Delta officer both my junior and senior year.
That's great. So, what was your favorite time of the day for class? As in, did you like to
This
eat class?
may come as a huge surprise because I'm probably bucking the norm. I am such an early morning person. Most mornings I'm up by 5. So that 8 o'clock class, and I do remember one, and I would always dress like I'm always overdressed. And I remember I had to get to an 8 o'clock class. This is before the trams and buses, all the way across campus. So, but I liked it. I like getting up early, but I also go to bed early.
So for the students who are listening, there was a proposal to start classes at 7:30, but we've decided
Yeah, nine's
that
probably
we
better.
won't. That's
I know
right.
I'm not part of the norm
Well,
there.
we have a capacity issue in the building, so we're always looking at how we make that work. So what was your favorite night of the week while at Miami?
Oh, of course, I think it had to be Thursday because I spent a lot of time at the library, King Library. But Thursday night was always the night that my roommates and I, when we lived off campus, would go uptown and or watch. I think it was Knott's Landing at the time. I know I'm dating myself, but that was always kind of the fun night, just to have fun and be with other people.
Did you intern while you were here?
I did not, but I did have some summer jobs because, boy, I had to pay for everything. I think I had a fancy, my I think my dad helped buy me a $400 car during junior year, and it was a brown Chevette. It wasn't the Vette, it was a Chevette with stick shift, by the way. So I had to work to pay that off. So I worked in a jewelry store, a fine jewelry store, a discount fine jewelry store. So I tried to sell a lot of diamond earrings during the holiday time frame to help make money. I worked at a retail women's clothing store, and I also was a salon spa receptionist. So those jobs kind of carried me through and helped my, I call it my allowance, and helping pay for that fancy brown Chevette that was
That's a
parked out by
fancy
our
brand,
house.
and also they were in the broadly in the industry that you ended up in the fashion
Yes,
industry. So I love it. Yeah,
it all fed in.
that's lovely. Where did you live in your freshman year?
I lived in Tappan.
Do you remember the room?
No. In fact, I'm actually still in contact with many of my roommates that we housed with. And then the second year I lived in Richmond, and then junior and senior year, six of us lived off campus just south of Attractions, which I don't think is still there at this point.
I'm not sure. No, I'm not sure. And did the house have a name, or is it a name you can share?
We called it the Young and the Restless. I don't know what the name of it was. It wasn't very nice, I can tell you
Yeah,
that.
that's right. What's your favorite building on campus, not uptown?
Oh, you know what? I'm not going to name a building, but I love the Western campus. I also had, I think, a couple of writing classes over there, and I remember going over to the Western campus and just thinking it just seemed like a whole nother place at Miami. It was just so beautiful and kind of serene and had a whole different kind of gothic vibe, I thought.
That's lovely. What about your favorite spot uptown?
Uptown, I remember mainly the restaurants and things. Like, I'm assuming it's still there. Is the pizza place Bruno's still there?
It is. That's right.
Okay,
It is.
50-cent slices. How much are they now?
I don't know. I don't do pizza
Probably
up there.
$2, I
Yeah.
imagine. And the bagel shop was always a
Right beside.
standby.
Yeah.
Attractions was kind of the place you took your parents when they were in town. And then there was a fun little Baskin Robbins. So I loved walking uptown. Uptown
Yeah.
was fun. And then I always had this clothing spot that I would probably spend more of my allowance buying all these clothes. I don't remember the name of it though. But yeah, uptown was a fun place just to be.
So when was the last time you came back on campus? And that's on us if it's been too
Oh
long.
goodness.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm going back a while. Well, initially when I was at Playtex throughout the years, I did some on college campus recruiting for a number of years. Then my roommates and I all came back for the 10-year reunion. But I have to be very honest. One of my friend's family still lives in Oxford. She grew up there, but I have not been back in probably 20
We're
years.
going to have to change that. Okay. And take you back to Bruno's Pizza. So what's your most memorable personal experience from Miami?
Just say all the, first of all, those women that I lived with off campus were still friends today. For the first 10 years, I'm dating myself, we used to do this chain letter where you'd put a letter in and you'd take out yours. It would go around the chain. It would take months to go around, was when we were mailing things then. To this day, we still are on group texts with one another and just have such a nice bond. We all live in different places, and I try to see various people when I'm, traveling, and maybe I see them on average once a year. One of my friends still lives in Cincinnati, so my husband's family lives there, so I see her more frequently. But I think just developing the people relationships, and what I'll tell you about my experience is I was the kind of person that worked really hard and probably didn't enjoy the journey enough, but that those relationships were really important. I was always about getting the job after school, and hence the reason I started 2 weeks after. But I was probably a little too serious about everything.
Well, that feeds into my next question. Perhaps if you were to change anything, what would that be?
I think again, it goes back to just enjoying kind of the present moment. I try to think about that all the time now. is just really enjoying what it had to offer and the personal relationships that I built. I probably would have taken advantage of tapping into the expertise a bit more. And, you know, maybe like I look back, like I hear people that still talk about their Luxembourg experience, or, you know, should I have gone for more of a programmed internship? Like those things I look back on, but yet I don't necessarily think I would be where I am now had I not taken the opportunities that I did otherwise. So it's hard to say what I wish I would have done differently.
Exactly. Is there a class you wish you'd taken?
Well, I don't know if it exists now, but like, okay, when I was there, I remember I took computer science off during summer school because there just wasn't enough hours to actually learn that. But there was a wine tasting class that I could never get in, and I have a love of wine now. Those would be two classes I would have taken at the time. But if I were giving anyone advice now, I would say hopefully there's an AI class. There's like an innovation class, because those are two things that I think are key imperatives to the business today.
That's great. I love it. Now we're up to the final chapter of this wonderful podcast. So I'm about to ask you for advice. What advice would you give our students and recent graduates? So it's a two-part question. Part one for incoming first years, what advice would you give them to make the most of the opportunities that they have here? And then part two for people who've been out of school for a couple of years, early career.
I think for incoming freshmen, it's just open your eyes to all the possibilities. And, you know, I think you always get more out of something, but put in, like, make it a profound experience. It's the people, though, at the end of the day, it's the professors, it's the environment. Just take advantage of all of that. Don't be a wallflower. You know, don't be reclusive. Like, put yourself out there, get to know people, and take advantage of everything that the experience has to offer. And maybe a little bit of my own advice to myself would have been, you know, have a look, balance the fun with the hard work, because the hard work will always be there, but you probably will have more memories from the fun part of things. So that's my freshman advice. The second part I think you said was, what would I tell people that have maybe left or building their career?
Yeah, just early career.
You know, this is advice that I give to a lot of people that I mentor and sponsor, and that is the power of networking and seeking advice and counsel from those that you admire, whether it's a skill or a capability or something you saw. Just ask, I always say, just ask someone if they'd spend a little time, or maybe it's a coffee. What's the worst they can do? Say no. So I think it's this power of networking, which I have found a pivotal part of my career is using my vast network through my many moves to help people, A, help people develop relationships, but also to power business, like through referrals and references and introductions, and don't have any fear about it. And it's just part of doing business, and it's part of being, you know, exploiting your human potential. And I would just say, really network and build your network, because that will be a big part of your career.
Now, I'm just going to make two comments in response to what you've just said, Mary, especially for students or the audiences that we speak of. Number one, we have an incredible alumni network here who want to help our students and want to help recent graduates. So my message to anyone who's listening is to reach out to Miamians, and it's an incredible group of people who are just there to help. And my other comment, as you were speaking about first years, you made me think of something we talk a lot about in our leadership groups. Students right now, they come back from class and they go into their rooms and shut the door and get on social media, right? And you're talking about don't be a wallflower and get involved and get out. So my advice to students listening is to try to not lock yourself away in your room and to actually, you know, keep the door open sometimes and have a conversation with a new person from time to time. Because I think that's just part of the richness of building these relationships while you're at school. What do you think, Mary?
I love that. Well, especially in today's workplace and workforce, is that human connection is so important. While I mentioned we're a hybrid organization, those days that we're in the office is about mentorship, and it's the nuances that happen outside of the Zoom call or the social media. You know, you need to be physically in contact with people, like your endorphins go up as well, this creative thought. It's much more innovative when you can do that. And so I would highly recommend. Yeah, you can go down the rabbit hole real quick.
Yeah, it's easy to do. It's safe. So as we close, I want to thank you so much, Mary, for your gift of time to allow me to record this podcast. One defining characteristic of the Farmer School of Business is just how engaged our alumni are and how willing they are to continue to find ways to support the school, our students, faculty, staff, and other alumni. And I will be finding a way to bring you back on campus.
I'd love to. I'd be happy to speak at a class, or if you ever have a group of students that are interested in hearing anything about consumer or beauty, I'm happy to be a part.
Without question, we do. So thank you so much, Mary, and go well as you continue in your journey beyond High Street.
Thank you, Jenny.